Welcome to Ask Peggy About Your Finances, because prosperity is so much more than money. Brought to you by writer, speaker, and certified financial planner, Peggy Dowiak.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 in Norman for production and studio assistance.
Hello, and welcome to the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. My name is Peggy Dowiak, and I'm a certified financial planner, practitioner, and a personal finance author. This is a show to help you understand your money, and I've got some great topics today. We're going to look at the booming jobs report and why I think people are still saying there's a problem with our economy. We're going to look at some legislation to make it easier for you to move company retirement plans. I'm going to talk about the best Valentine's gift you can give the person you love. And then finally, I'm going to answer the most common required minimum distribution question that I get. So let's get started with the bulls and bears market and economic update. This is for the week ending February 2nd, 2024, Groundhog's Day. And I was very sad to see that in Oklahoma, I believe we use a bear, but he saw his shadow right before it started raining. So in Oklahoma, we have 6 more weeks of winter. It does not make me happy. I am a spring and summer girl, but the good news is it's only 6 more weeks of winter. So just hang tight, we're getting there. But the market had a really good week last week. The Dow was up about 1.4%, and the S&P 500 was up almost 1.4%. The NASDAQ closed up a little over 1%, and gold closed up a little less than 2%. The price of oil per barrel, West Texas Intermediate Crude front month price, dropped by about 7.5%. That current price is $72.40 a barrel. The 10-year Treasury went up a little over 12%, and it's currently sitting at 4.023%. The dollar went up about 0.5%, and Bitcoin went up about 2.75%. But as good as the market was, the big news of the week was the fabulous employment data that came out on Friday, which has almost put to bed the idea that we are headed into a recession. Now, if you're a longtime listener of the show, you'll know that I've never been completely convinced that we would be going into a recession, because I thought that most of the causes of our inflation were not our own making, and everything underlying looked pretty good. But it's wonderful when the data starts confirming everything, and it's wonderful when the sentiment begins to change, because many people who were saying doom and gloom finally had to admit on Friday we're probably not going to have that scenario. So the U.S. companies boosted payrolls by a little over 350,000 jobs, which is the most that was created in a month during the last year. The wages also went up. Average hourly earnings went up about 0.6% on the month, about 4.5% higher than they were a year earlier. And the labor market is strong. Now, what this means from an interest rate perspective is the Fed doesn't have to be in a hurry to begin to lower rates. Because remember, the Federal Reserve is tasked with only two things: maintaining full employment and managing inflation. Well, unemployment is at 3.7% right now, and that's the third month that we've been about that number. And full employment in the United States does not actually mean 100% employed. The full employment number includes a few people who are unemployed. So the 3% of unemployment would actually count as full employment within the U.S. That's about as good as economists ever think it's going to get. Now, there's a couple of things that you need to know, just because it's my job to give both sides of every story. Some people have given up on finding jobs, Although what I'm hearing anecdotally is that number is also dropping, and the number of people seeking full-time work has gone up as they figured out after COVID, you actually can't make a living full-time doing Uber or DoorDash or something like that, where you only work about 10 hours a week. Now, you could earn a living full-time as an Uber driver. I'm not suggesting that that's a poor career choice. I am saying that when you just want to work 10 hours a week, it's really hard to make that work. And so a lot of people who kind of got a little bohemian after COVID are back in the traditional workplace. What I like is that's not raising unemployment because they're finding the jobs that they're looking for. So this leads to a really interesting to me phenomenon that's going on, where how the economy is doing depends very much on who you ask. And a lot of people think the economy is bad. Now, I believe that a lot of the doom and gloom that was in the press for about a year about, oh, we're going to have a recession, I think that feeds into it, because you could hear that story no matter what news channel you were listening to. So it wasn't exclusively conservative. It wasn't exclusively liberal. There were a lot of people thinking there was going to be a recession. A few people out there didn't. Many people did. And hearing that over and over is a drumbeat. The other thing that I think people don't understand is when you have inflation and it cools. So, you know, inflation was insane in 2022, and it came down last year. It's about normal right now. It's still a little higher than the Fed wants, but it's very much in its long-term average normal rate. But prices don't drop when inflation goes down. Inflation is the rate of increase of prices. So the only prices that will go down after an inflationary period are prices that went up too much in the first place, or they went up for a different reason than the traditional inflationary pressures. So, for example, there were some agricultural issues that also happened in 2022, causing some prices of like eggs to go through the roof. That really wasn't overall inflation. It was issues with chickens. So eggs are coming back down. But if people are thinking that the prices are going to go back to the pre-pandemic levels, they aren't. Prices never go down like that unless the economy is in a terrible, terrible situation. That is called deflation. And as nice as it kind of sounds, it's not good news. So I think it's the drumbeat of recession and the fact that prices are still up. And, you know, there's still economic, there's microeconomic issues. Macroeconomic data is really good. Macro is everything in general. Micro is your world. And so I think some people are still feeling some things. I think that I don't know how long it will take for perception and reality to match. And I don't know how long it will take for big macro data to trickle down, because none of this happens all at once. But the jobs data is good news. I was just thrilled to hear some people say, you know what, we don't think we're going to have a recession anytime soon. The people who had been yelling it the loudest. Now, the market's still going to be volatile. It's going to go up. It's going to go down. But when big pressures begin to ease, things just get better overall.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the legislative update of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And the Department of Labor is making a proposal that's really going to help people not just spend retirement plans from job to job to job when they move. So right now, the rules say that if you have less than $7,000 in a company-sponsored retirement plan, they can roll it into an IRA and out of your plan. Now, the way this would work in practice is they would take the 401k, say, for example, and they would put it to an IRA at the same custodian. So just as an example, if your 401k was held at Fidelity, the company can open an IRA in your name and move out your money from the 401k into an IRA at the same custodian at Fidelity. And they can do this without your permission if you have less than $7,000 in the account. If you have more than $7,000 in the account, it stays in your old company retirement plan and they have to deal with it. They want your money out when you're not working there anymore, especially if it's a small amount, for record-keeping reasons. There's some record-keeping that goes on in 401ks, and if you don't have a lot of money in the account, translate that to they don't get a lot of fees off of the account. They want you to move it out. A lot of times when they notify employees that this is going to happen, they give them the offer of, or you can just cash it out. And $7,000 may sound like a lot of money to you, but sometimes when you're changing jobs, it's like, yeah, I could really use that money. And the problem today is people change jobs often. And so you get a little bit here and a little bit there and a little bit somewhere else, and you can really easily blow through $21,000 if it's from three jobs, $35,000 if it's from five jobs, and it's not letting people save well for retirement. What Department of Labor is proposing is an automatic transfer of your old 401k at your old job into not an IRA, but the 401k of your new job. Now, I see some complications, and I've read the press release, and they say right in there, you know, there's going to have to be some components that will be part of this. There'll have to be a form, because in the old system, it was an IRA at the same custodian. But if you get a new job with a new 401k, the money could very easily be held somewhere else. You know, the old example, it was held at Fidelity. Maybe the new example, it's held at Schwab. So there would have to be a form somewhere that could match up the old 401k to the new 401k. But from everything I'm reading, it's going to be as automated as possible. And it's going to be the default unless people choose otherwise. Now, again, this is only for account balances of $7,000 and less. They're not doing a default for larger account balances. So if you've got $100,000 in a 401k and you don't want to move it, this does not apply to you. What ends up happening to people is they get little dribs and drabs at half a dozen different custodians, and it becomes a nightmare to keep up with. By helping people take their retirement plan and move it from job to job to job, it's much easier to track your money. I'm guessing, too, they're going to strongly encourage the new retirement plans to take roll-ins, because some companies do, some companies don't. I'm guessing that they will have to change some rules that would allow companies, or force companies, to allow the roll-ins if, in fact, this is going to become a default behavior. I like this. I pick up the carnage from this all of the time in my practice, where I either have people who are, you know, say 45, 50 years old. They had a job that had a 401k when they were working in their, say, late 20s. And there wasn't a lot of money in it. They got a better job at a different company. And so they spent it, right? They rolled it out. They paid the penalty. They paid the taxes. They took the cash. at the time they're in their 50s, they really wish they hadn't done that. And I think that everybody can use $5,000 of cash. I'm not being critical of people who keep it, but I am saying that you'd be really better off not doing that for your own retirement future, especially that money that has all those years to grow, because $5,000 can grow a lot in 30 years if you keep it invested, if you keep it within, of course, your risk tolerance level. But if it stays in, you know, we've all seen those charts about investing early is much easier than investing late. So Department of Labor is opening up a comment period on this. I hope it goes through. I think it'd be very, very helpful. I will track the progress of this because even though it doesn't sound like a big deal and it's not a great, huge, sweeping change, I think it's going to make a lot of difference to people in their long-term financial success. And that should be everybody's goal if they're in financial services.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the Plan Your Prosperity segment of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And we're just beginning to re-enter holiday season. And first up is Mardi Gras on Tuesday, February 13th, followed immediately by Valentine's Day. And I want to talk to you today about the very best Valentine's Day gift that you can give the person that you love. I want you to talk about money with them. And I know, man, what a buzzkill, right? You'd like to give teddy bears or champagne or chocolates or a nice dinner. And I'm not going to tell you not to do any of that. I am not even going to tell you that, you know, don't waste money on Valentine's gifts. I'm not convinced that's wasted money. So celebrate Valentine's Day in all the traditional ways. But on top of that, I want you and the person that you love to talk about your money. And the reason I want you to do it is because money issues are the number one cause of divorce, even higher than infidelity. And if you can create a healthy money dialogue, it will actually be better for your relationship than that box of chocolates will be. So I'm not suggesting that you keep a net worth statement in your pocket for the first date. In fact, I really think you shouldn't do that. That's a little creepy and a little weird, and I think you're going to run the person off. But as soon as the relationship starts becoming serious, you should talk about money. Where talking about money is not a big deal and is not the topic that nobody will discuss, the elephant in the room. Before you live together, you need to start having money conversations. As part of those, you need to be honest about your financial condition. If you say that you're more financially stable than you actually are, you are setting up this relationship for a catastrophe when the other person finds out you aren't. And trust me, they will. I don't know how, but something will go south and they will find out about it. And not only can that cause a financial bind if you've suggested that you could do things that you really can't, but it's also just a lie. And when somebody catches you in a lie in a relationship, it never goes well. Additionally, I'm not a fan of hiding financial assets from your partner. I think that when you hide financial assets, again, you're lying. And I would ask, why are you afraid for them to know? Now, I've heard some situations where, especially if someone comes from money, they want to be sure that the person loves them for themselves and not the money and not the things they can get. And I'm fine with you holding off for a while, but at some point, and before this gets like really super serious, you need to come clean. Additionally, When you don't know how much money your spouse or your partner is earning, it can create a nightmare estate problem. The reason for this is one of the ways you figure out how much life insurance you should buy is by knowing how much money you have available to spend, right? If you have considerably less or considerably more, it can cause the person to either buy a policy they don't need because, in fact, everything's fine, or they cannot get enough insurance, and then suddenly they find out the situation isn't as good as they thought it was, and it's a catastrophe. Now, do not have this money conversation when you're already fighting, because that's when money comes up, and that's why money ends up being a cause of the divorce. You're mad at your person that you love for a reason, okay? And maybe they deserve it, right? They totally screwed something up and you're mad. And then in the middle of it, it'll be, well, you didn't need to go to the mall last week. I can't believe how much you shop. Or I can't believe how much you spend on computer things. Or I don't know why you have to spend so much money on your car. And the money fight embeds itself in the bigger fight because people get mad at each other and they just start hurling everything they can think of to make the fight get worse. Don't do that, okay? Talk about your money when you're having a good day. Plan for it. Don't spring it on somebody because if they've had a bad day and you just kind of bounce in with a conversation, that may not cause the conversation to go well. Say, hey, I really want us to understand where we each are financially. I would love to make a picnic next Saturday. And the reason I'm saying don't go to a restaurant is you probably don't want to talk about your finances in a super public place, but let's make a picnic and let's just talk about things. Or make a standing money date 30 minutes a month. A month. I didn't say a week and I certainly didn't say a day. But if you guys could talk about your finances honestly with each other 30 minutes a month, you'll undo a lot of damage. Once you start that healthy money conversation, that's when the planning occurs with both people so that you figure out how much you're spending every month. And if you've listened to my budget lecture, you know that I want your spending to be a non-judgmental sharing with each other. When you're trying to figure out your monthly cash flow, it's not the time to start screaming at each other because you're both probably going to have to make some changes. And there's just not a reason for you not to be on the same page. It shouldn't be adversarial. Sometimes one person spends quite a bit. There's a whole other conversation about money scripts that we could talk about where those beliefs from your childhood impact what you're saying, and it impacts how you spend, and it impacts how you believe people react to money. Money scripts can be very dangerous. Generally, they're unhealthy. Once in a while, they're great. But most of the time, those old childhood money scripts carry with us until we're adults, and it causes us an issue in our new relationships because we replicate what we saw at home as a child, whether we think we are or not. So take some time to talk about childhood beliefs about money. If you're interested in learning more, you can Google money scripts. There's lots of good things out there. Brad Klontz does great work on it. Rick Kaler does great work on it. And you can do some checking on that. So really be careful with that. Now, once you've got that set up, go have a great Valentine's Day, whatever that means to you. If you're not into the candy and card routine and you want to go do something else, that is fabulous. You should have a wonderful Valentine's Day with the person you love. But I'd also love for you guys to set the goal of talking about your money beliefs, talking about your financial situation, because I promise that the results from that will last longer than the flowers will.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the Ask Peggy segment of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And when I entered finance back in 2003, the required minimum distribution age, or RMD age, was 70 and a half. And that was the age at which you had to begin taking money out of anything that was an IRA-based plan and a 401k or other kind of retirement plan if you had retired. The only way not to begin to take out retirement money is you didn't have to take money out of the plan at your current job if you were still working there. Everything else at age 70 and a half required minimum distributions. That changed in the SECURE Act that passed in 2019, and starting in 2020, if you weren't taking RMDs yet and you met just a couple of age requirements, your age changed to 72. And it stayed at 72 until the SECURE 2.0 Act passed at the end of 2022. And at that act, it went up from 72 to 73. So individuals born in 1951 received their first required minimum distribution by April 1st, 2025. Now, why is it April 1st? Because that's putting it off as long as you possibly can, and it's taking two required minimum distributions in the same year. Forever, the rule has also been that if you want to put off your very first RMD, you can push it until April 1st of the following year. The problem is you have to take two distributions that year. Typically, unless something is extraordinary going on in your financial condition, like you're making a lot of money one year and you're going to make a lot less money the next year, the ease of doing this usually suggests that you take the RMD the year you're supposed to take it. You don't double up. I've seen a couple of times that wasn't a good idea, but usually it's your best bet. So now the age has raised to 73 for anybody born in, 1951 or later. So if you're coming up on 70 and a half, that's not the age. It's also not 72, it is now 73. We'll have to keep up and see whether or not they continue to move this age later. One reason that they're doing it is to help people have their money last long enough, and because so many people are now working into their 60s and early 70s. I know a lot of people, they're not working because they need the money. They're working because they don't want to be retired for 30 years, and they want to do something that they love, and so they keep going. They don't need the RMDs. This lets you put it off until age 73. And again, the only exception at that point is if you're still working and still part of your company's retirement plan, you can postpone it again until you actually retire. But every other account requires it, even a retirement account that's based on an IRA.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
You may submit personal finance questions to the Ask Peggy Facebook page and learn more at PeggyDoviak.com. And remember, prosperity is so much more than money.